Thanks for checking out this episode of The Unapologetic Show, where we defend truth without compromise. We are counting down the top 5 episodes of the last year. Just a reminder, we are a listener and viewer-supported ministry. To join our financial support team, head on over to oneminuteapologist.com and click on donate. Let's listen to the most popular episode of this year.
Welcome to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise with Dr. Bobby Conway, the one-minute apologist. I'm your host, Tim Hall. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing some views of a progressive Christian. So, Bobby, before we get too far into this, we need to acknowledge that we're missing one person for our last few episodes. So why don't you just tell our audience, where is Heather Conway? Did she, you know, get fired from the episode from being on Unapologetic or
no,
what?
No, if anybody's going to get fired, my wife will be firing me, right? No, she did not get fired. One of the things, you know, when we started the radio show, we weren't thinking about planting a church. And so since the radio show got off the ground here, we've moved from Southern California back to North Carolina, and we're starting Image Church. And my wife has been engaged in women's ministries, and she's also helping out with children's ministries. And so all that to say, you know, you're building a house. Our workload has increased greatly, so she will be kind of a spot guest coming on. But nevertheless, Tim, what is nice and what is encouraging for our audience to know, at One Minute Apologist, you serve as the executive producer. Yep. I fly out several times a year, or I would fly out several times a year when I was living in California to do work together. Yep. So in some ways, it was a real no-brainer that when Heather was getting crunched and busy, that, hey, you and Tim go at this. And Heather's heart too, Tim, as you know, it's very much pastoral. It's she's wants to talk about more of the practical side of things. And I think at certain points she'd feel like, oh my goodness, I get a little bit nervous, Bobby, if you start talking about some of these types of things. Okay. So we'll bring her in and keep her on a heart level. And then you can kind of challenge me on some of these more academic topics that I know that you love as well.
All right. Well, let's do that. So we're going to review some clips from a YouTube video of a conversation between a conservative Christian and a progressive Christian. Now, this video has close to 200,000 views so far on YouTube, and many of the statements that the progressive Christian makes, I've heard many who put themselves in that camp make. So I thought it'd be really good to address some of these clips, some of these issues that he talks about. But before we do that, would you just be able to define what progressive Christianity is and why we're talking about it today?
Sure. And as you know, Tim, I haven't watched this whole YouTube piece that you want to interact around. And you've got it titled Conservative Christians, and you have Progressive Christians. And I don't know if by conservative, we're really talking about fundamentalists being juxtaposed with this idea of progressive Christianity, like ultra-fundamentalists.
Right.
So all that to say, I think as conservative Christians, I mean, we do need to conserve things like doctrine and morality in the way to heaven. But there is such a hyper-fundamentalism sometimes that turns people off, that the box is so constricting of Christianity that it's not an accurate representation of the heart of God. Now you come over to progressive Christianity, and this is kind of a look at God that keeps God evolving through time, so to speak. God's not going to be trapped by one particular culture. God worked through Moses in the wilderness in one particular way.
Yeah.
God worked through Jesus in another way, being the second person of the Trinity, obviously.
Yeah.
Loosening things up, like, you know, Jesus would talk about, for example, the law, you've heard it said, love your neighbor, as yourself, in the Old Testament. And then he would kind of up the ante and say, no, I tell you, love your neighbor as I have loved you.
Right.
So he's kind of, so there's, you know, the progressives looking at this going, seems like things are morphing a little bit. And then when the apostles come on the scene, like Paul, his view of issues might look a little bit different as well. And so they're thinking, well, you just fast forward that trajectory up and today into issues like homosexuality, LGBTQ, you know, multiple ways to salvation. They'll say, hey, if Paul was around today, it seems like things would be evolved as well.
Right.
But this poses lots of problems that we're going to get into on whether or not there's such a thing as absolute morality, absolute truth, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate that insight into that. And so as you, the listener, are checking this out, if you're listening to us on the radio and you want to listen to this show again, you can head on over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/oneminuteapologist, and it will be there for you to check out. And if you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to comment and let us know if you have had a conversation with somebody that you would categorize or that would categorize themselves as a progressive Christianity. So let us know that in the comments. So let's move to this first clip here. In this first clip, the progressive Christian is addressing the question of inclusion of LGBTQ identifying people in the church. So let's just go ahead and play this clip.
I need to figure out if the Bible really does teach this. If God really does hold LGBTQ people in a categorically different space than people who identify as straight, because the church has a long tradition of getting issues significantly wrong that do a vast amount of damage to people. And this has been one where the church has done a ton of damage for LGBTQ people. And I hit a point where I'm like, if I'm going to continue to be a part of this Christian tradition, being in this work, I need to figure out if I can continue holding on to this belief with any integrity. So then I began a research of the Bible on this topic, and I came out the other side of that realizing, oh no, the Bible doesn't teach what I've always been told that it says. And that led me to then getting fired from my church once they figured out I was affirming in my theology. And then that's how my wife and I, Kate, started our church a couple years later. But
okay, so there's several things that we could address in this clip, but I think the two that I'd like to focus on right now is one is how the LGBT people have been treated by the church, and the second one is how his church treated him. So let's start with that first one. What can we say about the way that historically people that have identified as LGBTQ have been treated by the church?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that the church has dropped the ball at times as it relates to treating the LGBT community. At the same token, that is not a systemic statement because there are plenty of people in the church who have always been passionate about showing love to the LGBT community. So I think when people talk like this gentleman's talking, it's not as if every single Christian is out there trying to beat up on the LGBT community just because they hold their own set of personal convictions. See, holding your own convictions and holding your own beliefs is not devaluing the LGBT community. It's trying to be faithful to what you see in the scripture. And so I think sometimes people think just because you don't agree with them that you're not valuing them, but that's not the way it's to be understood. Now, there are people that go out on the side of the roads and they're preaching hellfire and brimstone, saying God hates fags and stuff like that, which is horrific.
Yeah.
And but the funny thing is about this, most Christians that I've ever known would completely agree with that. Most Christians I've ever known would feel like we need to be loving to the LGBT community.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways we've created a little bit of a straw man here where we've erected something that we've made bigger than it really is. Like, I think the church has dropped the ball, and I think we can always be more loving. But I think people like this gentleman is dropping the ball and on what the truth says as well.
Right, right. So let's maybe take a little bit of a shift here. There has been a large movement, a progression, if you will, in our culture over the last, say, 50 years, where things, I've heard you use this language before, where things that were seen as sinful are now legal or legalized in our culture. So maybe you can talk a little bit about just that shift and why that's so important.
Well, when you look at the moral trajectory that I would call it, there are things in the culture, you're right, that the church and the culture used to share as it relates to moral virtues. But then things got tweaked, right? And so you went from this stage, and the morals kind of go like this. You reject something, then you tolerate it, then you accept it, then you celebrate it, and then you reject those who aren't in line with you. So take issues like divorce, homosexuality, LGBTQ, you know, legalization of drugs. At one time, the culture would reject these things, but then it began to tolerate it. Then it began to accept it. Then it began to celebrate it, like we have divorce celebration parties.
Yeah.
And then rejecting you if you don't fall in line.
Right.
And so what ends up happening is inside the church, progressive Christianity, where the culture has been growing further apart from the church, right? Because the culture's legalized something. And just because something's legal doesn't mean it's moral.
Right.
But the culture has legalized things like the government has, right? And so the culture and the church are growing further and further apart. And what some people do inside the church is they try to become progressive in their Christianity so that they can stay in tune with the culture. Mm. And what they often do is they look at what the culture is saying, and then they go and they try to fit their biblical worldview into the culture. And this is problematic. So I call it going from one extreme to the other. And the church is addicted of going from one extreme to the other. And I don't think his approach is the right response to the approach that he's challenging. I do think that we have to think about what's driving him. And I see some deconstructionism stuff going on here. I could see some postmodern philosophy at work. I don't know this gentleman, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the philosophy of deconstruction, postmodernity, has got a hold on him.
That's I would say that you're probably right watching the conversation several times there. So we've talked about the mistreatment of LGBTQ people in the church. Let's talk about his statement that he makes right at the end where he says, as he kind of shifted, as he moved into that position of being LGBTQ affirming, he lost his job at his church. His church fired him. So that raises this question about what are sort of the theological guiding principles that you might use as a pastor of Image Church to kind of judge whether or not a leader or a staff person is out of bounds?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I would imagine in his new church, I wonder if he would have somebody like me on staff.
That's a good point.
You know, so he might have felt like, you know what, I got let go because I was not, because I'm LGBTQ affirming. Well, what if somebody's not LGBTQ affirming? I suspect his entire staff is LGBTQ affirming.
Yeah.
So that's convenient, right?
Right.
So all that to say, is it relates to, you know, how to handle this, we do have to have some sort of guidelines. I mean, I recognize that for anybody. I mean, a Muslim imam that's kind of overseeing a mosque has to have some of his guidelines. And, you know, and a Buddhist priest is going to have some of his guidelines. So I don't fault people for, you know, trying to have their own set of values to express what it is that they believe. So I think that as a pastor, yes, I would expect that the staff would be Bible affirming. Now, he said, oh, I came to see that this is not what the Bible taught. And I can only imagine, you know, what his influences are on the Bible and how he's
right.
seeing this progressive hermeneutic that is probably influenced him. But I don't think it holds water. I think
yeah.
I think that he would get backed into a corner really quickly. In fact, I saw Sean McDowell, great Christian apologist, a great friend of mine, debate Matthew Vines. And Matthew Vines was huge on this whole gay affirming project. And Sean McDowell, in a loving way, absolutely dismantled Vines. It was a dismantling.
In a loving way.
In a loving totally way, yeah. Yeah. But it was a dismantling because the hermeneutic that they're erecting, it's very difficult. It's very easy to show that you're being influenced by deconstructionism, postmodernity thinking, postmodern thinking. There we go. We got it. That's what I'd say to that.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, let's move to this next clip. So Bobby, you've just finished up your second doctorate in the field of moral philosophy. And this next clip, he's going to make some claims about the nature of morality. And so one of the things that he explains right before this clip is that he kind of takes this naturalistic evolutionary approach to the origin, to human origins. So let's listen and then we'll get your response here on this.
Well, I'm struck by a couple words in that and that phrase that I think are worth pointing out before you know what we're talking about. So God, so the idea of God having a design, if we accept the premise that God is a being that is up or out there, that has, I talk about it as like a set of divine documents that God keeps in like a file drawer that pulls out occasionally and be like, this is sort of how I've mapped out my idea for this thing. I reject that as a possibility for how things work. Like, I don't think there is some sort of divine document out there that lays out a being's preferred order of things. I would then say, I don't, to go back to where I started, I don't think that there is some being in the sky who's like, and this now is how humans, once they show up on this thing that's been around for millions of years, once they get here, here's my expectations for how they move forward.
Okay, so this idea of God is a being that is out there with a filing cabinet full of morals. Is that how we should think about morality?
Well, a couple things. You know, first off, I am sympathetic to anybody that wants to show great value to the LGBTQ community. I mean, the truth is they're people, and we need to value everybody, and God cares about everybody. I mean, the Lord knows that I've got my issues, and I want to be valued as a human being.
Oh, yeah.
And that might be valuing me for the positions that I hold on this, right? So I can understand that. I can feel that tear in my own heart emotionally, where I want to reach out and say, man, that would be very difficult to want to be in a same-sex marriage, and you know, hear that Christian saying the Bible says that you can't do that. I can see the tension of that. I can see the pain, and I would imagine his heart is just full of wide love in that way. And I would want to share that I can feel that same tension, but I'm also feeling the tension of this is. I'm a Christian, and I see the Bible, and it's not up to me to treat it like going to TCBY and sampling different flavors of the day and then discarding what I don't like and taking what I do like. So it's my job not to be as concerned about what I think as much as what God thinks and aligning my thoughts to God's thoughts. And so I think that's an important piece for me to say. Now, to his point, this moral filing cabinet, so to speak, well, it is true that through progressive revelation that you see some nuance, right? I mean, there was a theocracy that was in place, and there was all kinds of laws that were in place for God's people in the wilderness to distinguish him. So you go, well, we're not obliged to comply by all those. And I'd say, yeah, that's true, because we're no longer under a theocracy.
Yeah.
But all of the Ten Commandments except the Sabbath was repeated in the New Testament again. And Paul on three different occasions in the New Testament, in Romans 1, in its most withering critique of homosexuality, is right there. It's reaffirmed again. And so where this person's going is you're opening Pandora's box so much, you got the LGBTQ. Well, what about the polygamists?
Right.
What about the polygamists? What about the bisexual who says, my love is so broad, I can't be content if I can't have a husband and a wife?
Right.
Like, why are you making me make a choice between a wife or a husband? I'm capable of a broader love, and it should be both. Well, then what about the person who says, I really feel like I can take care of four women really well?
Right.
Or, you know what? I have this relationship with this kid, and all this stuff goes on. And I'm like, he's opening up Pandora's box. And in the Bible, when we see polygamous relationships taking place, that was because God was meeting them in their culture where they were to bring them to where he was at with a monogamous relationship.
Right. So yeah, so there's lots of layers there. I think the way that you laid it out was fantastic. Let's move to kind of the second thing that he said there right at the end. Is it a problem for morality if God used a guided evolutionary process to bring about humans? Now, we don't necessarily have to say that we agree with a kind of a theistic evolutionary perspective or a young earth or old earth, but just in general, in principle, that seemed to be one of the evidences that he gave as a reason to throw out the idea of God having a morality that he is expecting his creation to be able to follow. Is that a problem for morality in general?
I don't think so at all. I mean, it just seems like he's read Sam Harris's moral landscape, you know, on well-being. I mean, I'm just wondering what he's reading. Foucault, Derrida, these French postmodern thinkers. And look, I get it. Like, I had my own attacks with doubt. But the reality is today that it's like, so is he a moral relativist? And it seems like he's clearly, you know, leaning that direction.
Yeah.
So I think that becomes problematic when you open things up that much, where morals are just constantly changing. I think that we can see, as I mentioned, there are certain codes, like you had the dietary law, you had the moral law, right? You had the civil law in a theocracy, and you know you don't need the dietary law anymore because that was pointing toward a picture. And the civil law, like, you're not under kind of the same setup. And even Paul could recognize, like, hey, Nero had his ways, and so they could recognize that. But the moral law, that moral law is written on our heart, according to Romans 2, that we are built with an ability to detect what is right and what is wrong. And we can't underestimate how much we are being influenced by our culture and how, yes, it's changing the way we think about things and it's changing the way we feel about things, but then we're going and we're restating what God has to say. And I'm just not real comfortable putting words in God's mouth.
Right. So just the idea of evolution happening over a long period of time, survival of the fittest, does that mean that God couldn't say that murder is wrong, or that adultery in any form is morally wrong, or some of those things? Like, does that create some sort of problem? It's like, oh, well, it seems relativistic. It's like, at one point it's okay, and now it's bad. Is that, you know, does that create
issues? It doesn't even make sense. I mean, okay, I think I understand that the late Ravi has gone through a lot of public scrutiny, but I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, a theistic evolutionist. So one of his, he would not have claimed to be a moral relativist. Timothy Keller, if I'm not mistaken, I think is a theistic evolutionist. I think Benjamin Warfield was a theistic evolutionist. You've had several gifted thinkers. The language of God, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Francis Collins, theistic evolutionist, he would believe in absolute morals. So I'd say the statement that theistic evolution paves the way for moral relativity doesn't hold ground to me, because in fact, the ones that I know who are theistic evolutionists would be moral absolutists.
Okay. So this is a good point. So to kind of finish up and round out today's episode, why don't we talk a little bit about guilt? So guilt has one of those things that you have spent a lot of time looking at. We've already talked about some of the elements that might bring on a feeling of guilt. How does guilt point to there being this kind of absolute morality and thus the existence of God? Just in a few minutes here.
Okay. Well, I mean, there is pseudo-guilt and there's authentic guilt. So I think there's a lot of people that feel guilt, but they're not in fact guilty. There's a lot of people who are guilty and they don't feel guilt.
Our friend David Wood, right?
Our friend David Wood, right? A psychopath. So, but he can recognize his guilt rationally. He just doesn't feel guilt for his actions. A healthy response would be able to recognize that guilt is caused by a moral, transgression, and we would have guilt feelings accompanying it. And so we're living in a culture today that, yes, guilt, the goodness of guilt. I mean, like, what could be the goodness of guilt? Well, it's good that we recognize that we are broken and that there's a God who came to redeem us. I mean, here's the deal. The cross, Jesus was dying for the things that we had broken, absolutely. He wasn't dying for a moral relativism on the cross.
Right.
If morals were relative and they really didn't hold much weight, then what was he doing hanging on a cross? Well, he was dying for our absolute right and for our absolute wrongdoing so that we could have an absolute way to forgiveness through Christ.
No, that is a really, really, really great point. And what a great way to end. So on next week's episode, we'll look at some more clips, particularly we'll talk about kind of where we left off today, we'll address how do we understand morals? Can we look at the Bible as a moral code book? So we touched on that today, but we'll respond to it a bit more in next week's episode. So if you are checking us out on the radio, you can watch this episode again at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/oneminuteapologist. And we hope that you join us again next week as we continue to look at progressive Christianity. Bobby, thank you so much for your insight today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bud. Glad we got a chance to talk about this topic.
All right, sounds good. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One Minute Apologist. I am your host, Tim Hall. Be sure to listen to Bobby on Pastor's Perspective Monday through Thursday, as well as like, share, and subscribe to the One Minute Apologist YouTube channel, where we have over 1,000 videos. We would also like to remind you that this is a listener-supported program. We would greatly appreciate your support in any amount so we could continue to provide this ministry. If you would like to be a part of our team in any capacity, please visit our website at oneminuteapologist.com. And while you're there, check out all of Bobby's books, courses, and even invite him to speak at your church or event. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.